Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
I feel like I haven't seen Eric Zorn in several weeks.
Well, you've been gone for a bit, and Eric was gone last week.
People will talk.
We're fiddle camp together.
Yeah, we had to diffuse a lot of rumors about that. Tell us about fiddle camp.
It's in the mountains of North Carolina.
John Cougar Fiddle Camp? Is that the one you went to?
No, it's called the Swannanoa Gathering, and happens every year for like the last 25 years or so. And they run on the campus of Warren Wilson College, which is a kind of a crunchy school just outside of Asheville. And there are about 250 of us who show up there.
From all over the country or the world?
In fact, one of the really amazing fiddlers there was a young woman from Cuba who spoke almost no English, but she plays American vernacular music incredibly well. It's amazing. And there are people from Ireland and the Netherlands who play this kind of music that in a way that you would think that they grew up in the hills there. So,
who is considered to be, of all the fiddlers, who's the hottest commodity right now?
The hottest commodity. That's a really good question. Well, I would say one of the things that's great about this music is that, like, your idols are there.
Yeah.
It's not that big a world.
Yeah.
And one of my all-time favorite fiddlers is a guy named Bruce Molsky, who's out in Massachusetts. And
you got to see him?
Oh, he was there. He was there, and he was teaching classes. I took a class from him. But one night, I'm sitting there playing with some people. We're sitting in a circle, and I'm trying to remember this tune. I'm playing it. And all of a sudden, I hear in my ear, I hear it exactly the way I want to be playing it, because it's the, and I turn around and it's Bruce Molsky sitting right behind me playing it.
Whoa.
just the way he plays it, you know, on YouTube and on his recordings. So I go, that's why it's sounding so good. It's a really great experience like that. And
did you tell Bruce Molsky that how much he means to you? Did you explain that?
I don't think I told him that directly. I should have told him that, but people really do sort of worship at his feet in a lot of ways. He's very good. And there are a lot of other, one of the really interesting things to me about this kind of music, the style of music, is that it's, that young women are really the hot, young, incredible fiddlers. A lot of them are women.
How come?
It used to be that it was not considered something that women did. There were very few women fiddlers, and then they had special women, you know, girls or women's fiddling contests that they kept
fiddling
separate.
Marcy, remember? We had her as a guest.
She was really good. Yeah.
But now, I'm not sure why it is exactly, but if you ask me to list my 10 favorite fiddlers, I'd say at least half of them are young women.
That's encouraging.
Really amazing. So it's catching on in that area. I mean, it's never going to. It's a niche kind of music, right?
Yeah.
It's old time American square dance fiddling, and I've been doing it for a long time. My son is playing it, and he's quite good.
I bet that makes you
someday
very proud.
He's going to be as good as Bruce Moore. Oh, yeah, it does. He's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So it's just one. It's like a little hobby, and we spent a whole week, and we're, you know, taking classes all day and playing all night, and it's.
And are you better because of it?
Oh yeah,
you play better.
Absolutely,
good.
Yeah. It's pretty fun.
So then it's this
transition back to work. Wendy was there. She will remember.
Wendy, you were there. Was it exciting?
My fiddling's a little different than yours.
A little bit different fiddling, but yeah, no, it's a. Well, it's very different from.
It's very popular
in other parts of the world. Has it caught on the way it has in the United States?
Well, it's an American vernacular music. It comes from, you know, there's Texas fiddling, there's North Carolina fiddling,
Appalachian music.
Well, there's a whole bunch of it's Appalachian music, and so what will happen is you'll get these people together who are real scholars of it, who'll say like, well, this comes from, you know, this county and, you know, in North Carolina, and this comes from that county, and they play the various fiddle styles. Now a lot of that stuff is becoming blended because of YouTube, because so many people are learning not from, you know, at the feet of the masters, but they're learning from them on YouTube.
Yeah.
So a lot of those fiddle styles are different. There's Missouri fiddling, there's Illinois fiddling, there's things that are, then they're all kind of mushed together.
But everyone gets along. There's no fiddle fighting.
There's no hostility. But
okay.
But it's really to be able to play with your idols.
That must be amazing.
It's a quite a trip.
And like Marshall Tucker Band, all these, you know, Southern rock bands always had fiddlers in their band.
Yeah, no, those fiddlers are often, they play in a style that's much fancier than I play in. You know, this Texas swing fiddling or this really hot bluegrass fiddling.
Yeah.
A lot notier than the kind of music that I play. And there's a lot more talented than
I. How long have you been doing this?
Well, I've been doing it since college, but I really, when Ben took it up about five, 6 years ago,
Your son.
My son Ben, I began studying it a lot harder, so I could try to keep
up. Because he was better than you, wasn't he?
very, very quickly. But
you want that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's good
absolutely.
To see that.
Oh, it's great to see, yeah. And in fact, he's leaving in a day or two. He's going to go down. There's the annual Woodstock of this kind of music. About 5,000 people show up in a place called Clifftop, North Carolina, and they camp out for like 9 days, and they play
Is
music.
It called Wood Stump there?
It's called the Appalachian String Band Festival, but everyone calls it Clifftop because it's in Clifftop.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
North Carolina, and it's this huge, like I say, it's like everybody just camps out and they just play. And
that's perfect.
It's really fun. It's a nice little hobby, and very, very different from opining on the news of the day.
I would imagine. I would imagine. But since you're here, let's do that for a minute.
Let's talk about
or two.
The news, too.
Wait, can we do a new segment where he plays the fiddle as he opines about the news?
I could probably do it.
That would be fun to listen to.
I'll play a very simple tune and play it. Or I'll bring in some recordings. I'll play it
in the background?
A little background music.
I would like that. All right. Let's look at that for next week.
Yeah. But what I wanted to talk about today is this a good time to talk about what I want to talk about today? That while I was gone, I was, of course, reading the papers, and there's a new law in Illinois that requires all single-use bathrooms in convenience stores or public to be labeled as non-gender. You can't say this is a men's room, a woman's room.
Single use meaning
it's
only one person, a single
there's
stall.
There's actually one here in the station.
That's how it should be, and that's how it should have been all along. Because
yes.
If there's one bathroom that two people can use, don't you save time?
Well,
space.
Yes, exactly. This is what we're talking about here. Is just a restroom that is
either or.
You go in, you lock the
right.
door, and it's either or.
Yeah.
And in a lot of places. Used to see it, and you see this like when you're. And I did a lot of driving last week, but you pull into a convenience store, and it'll be two single use restrooms, and one's women's, one's men's.
Mm-hmm. Stupid.
And it's always like, well, and usually the line will be, if there's any line at all, it'll be in front of the women's room, right?
Because
we take longer,
take a little longer. I don't
freshen up our lipstick,
putting on their makeup,
that sort of thing.
Whatever it is that they do,
fiddling
probably, and.
Okay,
and
legitimately fiddling, Wendy. Legitimately.
And this is something that you'd think it just makes common sense. And what I'm trying to find out is there were only 5 people who voted against it in the Illinois House, and nobody voted against it in the Illinois Senate. So it was like, you don't see that very often
right.
in politics. There's some almost unanimity. I'm trying to figure out what the possible objection would be to this.
We should call them.
What would it be?
Well, it might be.
I can't figure out why anyone would object to that.
There is a philosophy that just says, we overregulate. And I understand that. It's like we're telling business owners, well, these are the signs you've got to have outside of your bathroom. And there's some people who just say that that's enough. We don't need government getting involved in every little decision like this, which I see that, right?
It's saving them if they only have to have one bathroom as opposed to the space for two.
It's kind of amazing. Well, yeah, exactly. And it's kind of amazing that it actually came to this, that you had to have a law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think that places, and I've seen certainly there are places like the Old Town School of Folk Music had some single-use bathrooms that were labeled men and women until a year or two ago, and then they just...
Bathroom.
Yeah. There's no, but there's another issue that comes up, which is that there is another movement to have all gender or non-gender specific bathrooms, public restrooms where you have a row of stalls.
And, on Allie McBeal, where men and women went in and used the bathroom,
like in Allie McBeal.
Yes.
Yeah. And there was some controversy. I was listening to a podcast from the New York Times, and Michelle Goldberg, one of their columnists, she was at Netroots Nation, which is this gathering of ultra liberals, just recently, and she said that they'd converted most of their bathrooms in the convention center into all gender restrooms. So if you're a woman, you had to walk by men at urinals to go to the bathroom.
I don't like that. I got to be honest with you.
Well, and she didn't either. And she said there was one bathroom in another part of the building that had not been converted. And it was for women and had about 3 stalls. And she said there was a huge line of women waiting to use it. And so it becomes a question like, well, I have the same feeling as Wendy does, which is like at some point it's weird because you're a little bit torn because you realize that the point of having this is to break down the gender binary, and there are people who are trans or non-gender conforming, whatever, who feel threatened by, you know, in a bathroom setting, or confused, or the situation is not comfortable for them.
Yeah.
So to make them feel more comfortable to have this option. But I think there are a lot of people who feel like Wendy doesn't, who and I do. And I don't know, Bill's looking at me like
he doesn't use
public restrooms ever.
He doesn't. He just like opens the window or what?
Well, he just doesn't go. I think he's a Borg.
Men are animals. There's no sense of aim.
Well, maybe this is the justification for having the single use room for men to let them.
Yes, men are dirtier, but there have been horrible years and years ago that, you know, there's a single-use bar bathroom, and the men are flipping through it real quickly. I have used so many men's bathrooms because it's gross. But when you have to go, you get in, you get out.
It is, in your experience, it is
much dirtier.
Men's room is grosser.
Always.
Well, then maybe that's a justification for it. For having them.
Yeah, but whatever you look like, go in that bathroom. You know what I mean? And no one asks questions. No one cards you as to what bathroom you go into. Just,
well, you can get a look when you're going in or going out, right? If you emerge from the men's room, will people...
Do they ever say anything?
No, not anymore.
Yeah, I think not anymore is probably the right answer.
I don't even think, but years ago either.
But this idea of gender inclusive bathrooms, it seems like you could have, and this also opens the window into this conversation about locker rooms.
The window should be open there.
in the men's room, you know what I mean. In Palatine, they were having this controversy about a trans girl, but I can't remember. Which I think it was a trans girl who wanted to use the girls' locker room.
Yeah.
And the question was, you know, if the cisgendered girls were made uncomfortable by this, how do you accommodate everyone? How do you make people feel safe and included and welcome?
There's
and
no
so on?
Safety issue. It's just everybody's changing.
I don't think it's. I think you're right. I think it's not literally a safety issue, but it's an emotional
people bring
safety
that
issue.
Up.
Yes, they bring that up. Like men are going to follow little girls into bathrooms.
It's simply not true. And you know what? Maybe in my high school, when we changed in the girls' locker room, maybe there was someone who was transgendering then, and I didn't know. I don't sit around and look at everybody.
Well, my daughter, who's now in college, but when she was in high school, I asked her about this because it was raging up at a different area, and I said, "Is it? What do you think about that?" And she was just extremely nonchalant about it. She was like, "I don't care."
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like people strip down to nothing and prance around the locker room. It's like you usually keep your underwear on. And kids in high school gym classes, actually, I don't think shower much. I think
don't have enough time.
That doesn't happen. Yeah, they don't have the time. So it's not like people are getting a free show or something.
No, it's not about...
Or that someone would go through... This is the thing about the whole transgender issue, which is that someone would go through everything that you need to go through to identify as transgender,
mm-hmm.
or to become whatever the proper terminology would be, in order to
score
ogle people.
Yeah.
I mean that's completely absurd. So there's a certain basic insensitivity at the core mm-hmm. of that question. But I do have another issue that came up at Fiddle Camp.
Is it a big issue
having to do with this very thing? And should I mention it now?
No, Eric, don't. Wait, can you wait 2 minutes and 35 seconds?
I think I can.
All right, Eric Zorn with another issue. Stick around, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune, co-host of the Mincing Rascals, which won a huge award this year.
An enormous award.
It was Tell everybody what
Silver
you won.
Silver Dome Award.
Pretty good.
Illinois Broadcasters Association.
It was the like best podcast.
It was the best non-broadcast use of audio or something like that. It was kind of a strange category that you'd think that broadcasters wouldn't pay attention to because we're not broadcasting.
Right.
We're just podcasting. John Williams, your friend John Williams.
You were up against Game of Thrones. That's a weird category.
We were, yeah. Well, we clobbered him.
Yeah.
We beat him.
Good.
So what I wanted to, coming out of this conversation about bathrooms, we're talking about gendered bathrooms, and mm-hmm. in fact, there's a new law in Illinois that says that if you have a single-use bathroom, you just one that one person can go into at a time,
right.
That you can no longer, as a business, can no longer label them for men and for women.
Yeah.
Which Wendy and I agree makes a lot of sense, and I think you abstained.
Doesn't apply to me.
You abstained.
Yeah.
But this happened to me at Fiddle Camp. We were the class started, and the young woman who's teaching the class said, wanted us to go around the room, and she said, I want to know what you want to get out of this class. And I want to know which pronouns you use.
Referring to yourself?
Referring to yourself.
Okay.
So you would say, you know, my name is Eric. I use he, him, his, I think is how it's said. And that's, we went around the room and asked everyone to specify their pronouns. And I noticed that a number of people, including me, I'm not comfortable with that kind of signaling. I felt like there's something about it that felt a little bit forced and awkward, because it wasn't the kind of situation where you would be referring to people in the third person a lot. It seemed to me like more of
unnecessary.
More of a question of, like, were you willing to make a statement of support for trans people or gender nonconforming people, which I am supportive of them, mm-hmm. by the way, but I felt like this felt a little performative.
Yeah.
And so we went around the room, and I would say about half the people who they said, well, you know, my name's Bob, and I'm here because I want to learn about the Boeing style that you use, and some of them would, about half of them went and did the pronouns. And the other half just
half went into just saying,
I wouldn't say it. I would just say, I'm Wendy. I'm here to play the fiddle.
Yes, and that's
but you had that right. You could have done what Wendy just said.
I did do what Wendy said, and I noticed that some of the young, there's some young people there. I mean these are like preteen, like not preteens, but young teenagers, 13, 14, 15. And I would say maybe most of them weren't comfortable enough answering the pronoun question.
How about just call me by my name?
Well, that's what would happen. See, and that's why it seems a little strange, because you don't often in a situation like that refer to somebody across the room and use a pronoun. It's more a question of, like, are you going to make a statement by specifying your pronouns? And do you guys get email every once in a while from someone who at the end of they'll sign their name, and at the end they'll say so-and-so, have their title, and then say preferred pronouns?
No, I've never seen that.
You've never I've seen never that? Seen that either.
Well, you guys don't get
we don't get
you
email.
Guys, you guys, well, no, you don't have as lefty friends as I do, I guess, or context. But I did learn.
How often do you get that?
You know,
with some regularity?
Some regularity, yeah.
Well, I'm surprised.
But I learned something in looking into this, that the term preferred pronouns is no longer acceptable, considered property, or saying that somebody identifies.
That's also not.
That's not considered bad form, because it seems to offer an option. This is what I've read. It seems to offer an option to people of not accepting. Like, this is my preferred pronoun, but you have an option not to use it. So say preferred means that there's an option.
Yeah.
And not declaring it to be true.
Really?
It is getting so complicated to just have a conversation or send someone an email. Just let's treat each other respectfully and call everybody by their name.
Well, I tend to agree with that. I do have, like, one of my wife's former colleagues identified as they.
Yeah.
She wanted to be referred to as she, he.
They have to say they wanted.
I know, it's hard. It's difficult. They wanted to be referred to as they,
mm-hmm.
right? Not he or she. And my wife and I, you know, we're both like, okay, that's okay. That's fine. That doesn't no skin off my nose to do that. But it was really difficult. Sometimes we would be talking about this person at home, just, you know, casual about this is happening and who's in charge of it and so on. And we were always having to correct one another.
Yeah.
You know, Johanna would say, like, she's doing this. I say, yep, not she, they. She goes, that's right, they. And even in conversation with each other, not without her being present, we were trying to get that right. Now, Johanna runs this conference every year. About 800 people show up in town here. It's called the Third Coast International Audio Festival. Mm-hmm. And on their name tags, they have your pronouns that you want to use. And you don't have to have this on your name tag, but a lot of people do. She said about, you know, 40% of the people have on their name tags. And sometimes it's pretty obvious, I would think, what pronouns you'd have. But,
right.
But people use that, I think, not to clear up ambiguity in some cases, but just as a way of suggesting what your personal politics are about this issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see that, but it's almost like, you know, putting your name tag, I am not a racist, I am not a sexist, I am not transphobic, and so on. So it's an interesting situation. So the fact that we went around this room, and about half the people, including some of the young people, seemed to be uncomfortable with the whole...
But no one called them out on it, saying, do we need to do this part of it? Nobody asked
No
that.
One did. You know, it's... because it feels... In some ways, you don't want to bring this kind of political stuff into...
It's a fiddle class, for gosh sakes.
It's a fiddle class. But, you know, you want to be... You want to be inclusive. You want people to, you certainly want people to feel welcome,
of
right?
Of course you do.
But, yeah. But anyway.
That's Eric Zorn. He writes for the Chicago Tribune. Read them in the Chicago Tribune.
I want to be called Queen.
All right.
Your Majesty.
Thank you.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Don Kleppen from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.